I'd like now to welcome Lama Pema Wangdak. He is going to be in Santa Fe this coming Sunday, March 8th, at 11 in the morning at the Santa Fe Women's Club and Library Association, giving a talk called Where Do We Find Our Strength and Hope? Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
So you were born in Tibet, and you came to the United States about, what, over 25 years ago. How did you find yourself coming to this country?
I was sent by my teacher, who is also the head of the Shakya Order of Tibetan Buddhism, to the West at the request of the Western Buddhist community here in the New York City area.
And when you got here, one of the things that you found was the great cultural differences in the communities from where you came and here in the United States.
Yes, certainly. It was a learning process, actually, to learn the entire set of culture that we are not familiar with it, and we come with our own background or our own culture. So it was, for me, the beginning was not so much of serving the community, but more of learning what, who are the friends, who are the community members, and what, how people think and go about their own daily lives and do the good things and challenges and how to confront the challenges, etc. It's a kind of totally new insight or outlook into it. So it's for me a new discovery.
One thing that interests me about your work is that, as well as teaching Western people Buddhist traditions, meditation practices, ways of life, scripture, and so on, you're also very interested in what the East can learn from Western culture and the mutuality of those two exchanges.
Certainly. It's really a personal experience for me. I feel very fortunate to be here in the West and to be a Tibetan born, raised in the East as a Tibetan within that culture. Now I'm in the West. In fact, looking backward, I just discovered that I spent half my life in the East, half my life in the West so far. So, and also, my upbringing is within the Tibetan Buddhist culture, and my life here in the West put me in such a special place that many people do not have that. For me, it was purely a accident, but I'm pretty sure it's the design of my teacher who see the world as whole, East or West. I personally feel very fortunate in the sense that I have access to both culture, as if I'm standing on the top of the mountain, looking on the right side as well as the left side of the mountain, able to see what is behind on either side of the mountain. That kind of opportunity and the accessibility to the world culture. And that gave me a lot of insight into how wonderful every culture can be, including the Western culture.
So when you look onto the two sides of the mountain, what do you see? How would you describe the cultural differences between East and West, between Tibet and the United States?
There are similarities when it comes to our human side of our feelings, our desires, our aspirations, our wants and likes and dislikes. Is literally exactly the same. But the form and the color it takes shape is different. The format, the mode of doing things are different. And the philosophy or religion is certainly is different. And especially as Buddhists, it's one of the non-theistic, greatest non-theistic religion. It's a profound experience for me, actually.
So our feelings and emotions are the same, which I suppose is why meditation practice is so attractive to people in the West, because it addresses exactly those things that are universal.
Absolutely. I must say this. As personal opinion, East and West complement each other. There's so much we can offer to the West. The West do not have the access to. There are so many other things that we can learn from the West that we don't have access to. Especially Tibetan Buddhism has this, it's based on Indian Buddhism, come from India. It's really a world that explores within us, where our Western culture, from the religion to prayers, to rituals, to our science, technology, everything's gear our sight beyond us, where Buddhism takes us backward into within ourselves. And that started with our teacher, Lord Buddha, close to 3,000 years ago, sat under the tree, sat there trying to see the world that is within. Something the West can achieve just like in the East, but West don't have the resource. Tibetan people have spent at least 1,500 years of, we put everything in it. We literally put our national interest into the spirituality, our inner science. So we do have something the West can take the benefit. The West don't necessarily, may not have that kind of resources within this culture. So that's kind of an enriching thing for the West to have the Tibetan Buddhists or any other Buddhists coming to the West.
So you're describing really the difference between an introverted and an extroverted culture in a certain way. What happens when you look within? I think from a Western point of view, you develop wisdom by examining the world rather than examining yourself. So what happens when you examine yourself, and how do you examine yourself in order to attain wisdom?
First of all, we don't have answers to every question, every issue, every problem. We all know that. And what Dharma, the teachings of Buddha teaches, is that how can we go about doing things that we can do something and we work and accomplish? The Buddha teaches that, to strongly put an effort, a joyous effort, in doing the, enjoying the life, having a good time, and make the best out of this world. On the one hand, we call it precious human rebirth, that this is the most special life in existence we like to see, and we like to meditate, we like to believe in it. On the other hand, this wonderful life and existence has its limitations. So when we do that, how we go about those things, how we can confront difficulties without having to expect the world that there is no pain and suffering, how each individual can discover the power and the potentiality. And there is a way to do it. And we like to incorporate both inside of us and outside of us things like teachings on peace itself, patience itself, things like our contentment itself, the value of contentment. We study on the value of the contentment. We think, we meditate, we reflect on it. We practice, we apply them, and it will work. It does work. Meaning that when we have no answers to everything, we must find a way to overcome those difficulties. And Buddhism does teaches those things, and where the West will have a hard time dealing with those issues when we are confronted with that.
When I hear you talking, I think that there is some suspicion of contentment in at least a kind of puritanical Protestant culture, because if you're contented, that means you're not working.
Mm-hmm. Now remember, every word we use, whether it's any other religion or in Buddhism especially, we cannot take it light. We cannot take the light if it is violence, and neither we should take it light if it is peace. When we talk about generosity, kindness, patience, acceptance, we take it really seriously. What is that? How is that? How can we accomplish? What it is about? It's not like you hear this word on the sidewalk on New York City street. Oh yeah, you do this and things will be all right. Certainly Buddha don't teach like that. We take it seriously into account of how we go about, how we understand those meanings, and how we go about accomplishing those meanings. Just like we do, you know, in our life, we just to go downtown takes us a little consideration, what route we take, subway or the bus or the walk, or we need to know how to get there. We take seriously when we say contentment. We don't take it on the face value. Yes, it can be misunderstood that, like in Christianity, it could be misunderstood if you live like that. So we learn, we educate, we grow, we live, we learn to live by that. And there's something to be understood in those teachings.
We're talking to Venerable Lama Pema Wangdak, who will be in Santa Fe this Sunday, the 8th of March. So another thing that I've noticed as a cultural difference and religious difference is that both Buddhism and Christianity have morality. They have what are called precepts in Buddhism and maybe commandments in the Judeo-Christian tradition, and you have sins and so on. What is similar and what is different about the morality in East and West?
I think the context is different, and that is always the case. You know, I can talk about morality, you can talk about morality. Even between you and me, it will be different. Why? Because we'll have a different context. Communist talks about peace. Buddhist talks about peace. Capitalist talks about peace. Even my worst enemies and friends, best friends, talk about peace. But there's going to be a different in meaning of that peace depending on who they're who are they, where they're coming from. Each peace has its own contractual meaning. For some people, peace means if you don't harm anybody, and that's it. For some people, peace means you can harm. You don't harm until you need to harm. For some people, peace means you don't harm others when they don't harm you. But if they do harm you, you don't practice peace. So, in other words, each religion, each individual, each culture, each group of people have their own definition, and those differences are based on the context. So the difference between the Christianity and Buddhism, the belief in peace is pretty close to the best of my limited knowledge. But how you go about accomplishing, executing, applying, and living by that peace, I can not say for sure, but there are differences, not just individual differences, personal differences, but there is a degree of philosophical differences. For example, for Buddhists, if you are peaceful, we don't necessarily have to bring into some kind of religious blessing into it. If Amazonians believe in peace, we are for it. If a communist, an individual who is communist, pursues peace the best he can, we are for it. In other words, we don't necessarily have to be blessed by the historical Buddha or our teachers to kind of make that peace something confirmed. So in other words, whoever does good, we respect that. It doesn't have to have a religious blessing or sanctioning on it. Other religion may not have that kind of thing. They may want to put that peace in that particular context.
There's another interesting difference, which is when a person does something wrong in Christianity, often they're made to feel guilty, and in Buddhism it's a wonderful opportunity to learn.
I think the guilt is, I don't know for sure because I haven't studied Christianity that much, but Buddhism, we see everything as opportunity to learn, exactly what you said. And in fact, to be clear, yes, there is a degree of a guilt we also use, just to for you to know that. But we pursue a path if that is helpful. In other words, the guilt, if that helps me to be more mindful, to be more attentive to my acts, then it's nice to have a guilt. But if that very guilt is distracting me or harming me, discourages me, then in Buddhism we teach that guilt has no place. It should not be there. And then we do not regard that guilt as a worthy thing to pursue. So we like to see more of a learning process, as exactly you said. And then in Buddhism, instead of guilt, we may use the word regret. It's nice to be regretful of what one has done. It's nice to be a little bit more conscientious and be a little bit, even to a point of a little paranoid, or a little bit of that negative emotion has a good kind of flavor in the spiritual matters. So, yes, there are differences in approach. I noticed that.
The name of your talk that you will be giving on Sunday morning is Where Do We Find Our Strength and Hope? And I was thinking when I read that title of a conversation I had with a friend here in the cafe several days ago, and we were talking about the economic situation, and she said, how can you not be afraid in times like this? And I thought, well, what if that were not a rhetorical question? What if that were a real question? How can you not be afraid in times like this? Does Buddhism have anything to teach or to say on that?
Yes. First of all, we always like to be a little bit objective. In other words, yes, if I say that if you are afraid, and if I tell you something meaningless, say, okay, if you are afraid, take this 5-pound rock in your back. And you will ask a question, why do I do that? I say, just take it. And it is going to bother you unless you know why or what it means or what it matters if I carry this. If I say it has no meaning, then certainly the reaction will be, why do we do these kind of things? So in Buddhism, we, as part of our meditative, analytical meditative practice, we like to learn to see the thing objectively, our feelings, our anxieties, our fears. Yes, there is a place for them. And yet, if you look close enough, you will see the irrelevance of those fears. In other words, the fear have no relationship with the ups and downs of our economy. It has no say. In other words, it does not add or delete anything. In fact, the fear does add more harms to ourselves. We like to see economy is something very important. That's the human nature. But we also like to point out, inasmuch as our external conditions, like food and clothes and house, we're going to pay bills, we also like to see what, just as it's going to destroy some of our conveniences, we like to see how much our fear, anxiety destroys ourselves. Meaning, if we cannot allow somebody physically harm us, we should not much more so make sure and be attentive, never, ever to, in other words, to make sure and be attentive to protect this peace of mind, this good health of our body. If we are not happy, if we're anxious, if we're nervous, there's a great chance that we will contribute to our negative side of the experiences of our mind and the body, and they are invaluable, much more than house, cars, or conveniences that we normally think about. So if you really look at it, you will see the anxiety and fear will be not only is irrelative, but it also is so harmful and literally very, very destructive element in our life. So who in the right frame of mind, if he or she sees that such is the case, will ever resort to and feel kind of comfortable with feeling the negative emotions that somehow feels like we are being accompanied by, somehow it feels that we are supported by. But, of course, the quick answer to that such question is understandable. Yeah, we not. Why not? We should feel that. But if you look close enough, you will see a different world.
Well, what I hear you saying is that through practice, you can actually have some choice about what emotions to feel.
Absolutely. We do have that power. We're right within us. We have the ability in each one of us to explore and provoke that quality, that strength, that courage. Because there are times you and I and everybody else go through difficult times, even more dangerous, but we don't necessarily invite the help of anxiety. Because we're smart enough, we know enough that it's irrelevant. So it's that there's so much is there for us to learn to make our life meaningful, strong, courageous. If we really want to worry, there are so much more other things to worry about equally. But we're not going to do that because we know it's irrelevant. And likewise, this kind of experience that is coming right on the top of our head have a similar agent, and that it is an irrelevant issue to our peace of mind and good health. They must be treated seriously. The economy has to be treated seriously. People have to work hard. People do whatever we do economically or politically. I'm not saying we should relax and do nothing. In fact, we should do more, work harder. But what about this nervous state of mind, anxious state of mind, unhappy state of mind? They're irrelevant. In fact, they are harmful to our productivity of our life. They are spiritually harmful. They are practically harmful. They don't serve any purpose.
Let's go back to where we started the conversation, which is the wonderful differences that you've seen between East and West and how the two complement each other. What are some of the good qualities of Western culture that you think are useful to bring back to the East?
One of the good things about that is organization is very good. I don't mean in the religious sense of organization, but the people, there is some kind of order in doing things. That's wonderful. East don't have that. East, if you go to India, you know, you drive, you hire a taxi, you really feel how it's unorganized. Whether it's traffic, whether it's a religious setting or social setting, and likewise, that kind of organization affects how we as a social community run and make our life a little better place to live on. And that organization affects education of the people. And that affects, education affects our health, our quality of life. It affects even our morale, dignity. So West does have this system, whether it's a technology or a political system. America certainly religiously believes, say, for example, freedom, liberty. Politically speaking, we don't believe in any particular individual. We believe in the system that we put together here. One president goes, one president comes. System, they do good works, and that sometimes they fail. And yet, we keep on doing it, because that's a system that we can depend on. So this is a wonderful thing about it. And then, of course, other things like architecture or music or all those things that can uplift the quality of life, make it a little happier, longer, in a social setting, in an organizational way, that people can, handicapped people can read or write, deaf can speak, the blind can read, a physically handicapped can go from his or her apartment to the work, unbelievable. There are a lot of wonderful, beautiful things that we in the East, we don't even imagine about it, let alone doing something about it.
Well, you developed a system of Braille for blind people in Tibetan language.
Yes, that's interesting. That's part of that we can learn so much from the West. We each can share, give each other so much. There's so much the West does already give to the world. And we as Tibetan people, with our culture, can give so much. And we have given to the world. And I think it's a Tibetan Buddhist wisdom teachings of the Buddha. It's a world heritage. And then people do take advantage of it. And I wish they take advantage of it. So that's, for me, it's a personal experience that does truly, I truly enjoy this kind of life that's a life that I have the opportunity to see both East and West and both modern world. I live in the ancient world. I'm kind of middle-aged, so I'm not too old, I'm not too young. So I'm right in the prime time of my life to be able to appreciate those things.
Venerable Lama Pema Wangdak is Tibetan Lama, who will be here in Santa Fe on Sunday, March 8th at 11 o'clock at the Santa Fe Women's Club and Library Association at 1616 Old Pecos Trail here in Santa Fe. And there is a suggested donation, although children are free, and that will go toward Pema's school and school projects in India, Nepal, and Tibet. You can RSVP at the number 505-424-0936. Venerable Lama Pema, thank you so much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks so much to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz with John Greenspan presents a tribute to the late drummer Louis Belson and features Artist of the Month guitarist Charlie Bird. Broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow with Robert Knott and our monthly animal segment. That's all right here on KSFR. Hasta la vista. Ciao.